on the PatCast. Jeff Patterson and Jason Botchard, all things Canucks and Botch. Man, we've got a lot to talk about. It's crazy all that's going on around this hockey team right now. And forget the on-ice. Like, the week that was here, we could do a podcast on the media battles and the guy from Pittsburgh that thought the city was burning down. You're back on the radio. I heard that. Like, that in itself could be a segment.
Yeah.
Like, there's
like I want a GoPro on that guy. Like, I think the most remarkable out of all of that, the Pittsburgh writer or columnist, I'm not sure, he has a website or something. And you know, the city, Rome was burning outside as he went out and saw the Rugby 7 crowd. And apparently every time he comes to Van, he's got like I want a
just
GoPro.
I'm
not even kidding. Like, my biggest surprise was that he was tweeting like 20 minutes after the game. So I have no idea. I watched the game, went out and did interviews, and then wrote a column, and then checked out of Rogers Arena in time to see all the carnage. But I am so close to, like, the next time the Penguins are in town, telling, like, the province I'm not writing tonight, I'm just fucking following that guy. Like, I want to see the craziness in the city streets of Vancouver, and I'm gonna, like, put a GoPro on my head and follow that dude around. That's going to be my assignment for the night.
He'll take you places like you can't even imagine exist. Like, you think you have a pretty good handle right. on your city.
Yeah, I've been around. I've seen some odd stuff.
He's got the worst luck. Like, every time he comes to Vancouver, apparently.
Is it the worst luck to see, like, a big fight and not be in it? Like, that seems to me to be, like, if that's the worst thing that, like, I've been in cities and mugged.
On a Saturday night.
Jumped. Yeah. I was in Rio and got, like, stabbed in my legs. Like, I've seen some stuff. And if the worst thing that you saw on a Saturday night was a fight that you're not in, you have lived a blessed life. And, of course, the other big thing, like, Drancer goes away for, like, 10 minutes and all hell breaks loose between the professional media and the bloggers. I was just dumbfounded. Like, I'm still getting phone calls and texts on it today. People like, what the hell is going on in Vancouver? Like, I've had to kind of walk some people through it, and it's wild. It was wild watching the whole thing. It was wild going down. And then it's wild to think. Now I have to think, and in my head, I'm thinking, like, Drancer really did keep everyone together. Like, the power of Drancer. He kept, like, this fragile relationship between these professional media people and the bloggers, and he threaded that in a way that it seems, because I used to admire it. I used to think to myself, I would see it in Edmonton, everyone always arguing. I'd see it in Toronto, like, all this vitriol and the guys fighting. I thought, oh, isn't it great in that Vancouver here, we embrace the blogosphere. You know, we have a relationship with these guys. We can argue, but it's no big deal. And now, in retrospect, I'm thinking, holy shit, it was Drancer that kept this whole thing together. And without him, it's chaos.
And it all comes in the week, and maybe this is why it came in the week, that Van Hack and the analytics conference, right. I sat at the back of the room. I took in the afternoon portion of the program. And, you know, the spirit of Drancer was alive in that room. There's no question.
Right.
Like, I could feel him. He wasn't there in person, but I know that he was there in spirit.
Right.
But then, I mean, it took the left turn to poetry. Like, nobody saw that coming.
That was wild.
That was a dramatic turn of events.
That's DEFCON. What's the highest DEFCON? That's DEFCON highest level. Oh, my God. Like, I was just finishing my province. I did a take on it. And I told iMac, I said, look, I'm doing a take on this. I'm going to be writing about it. And then him and I had a bit of a reasonable conversation about it. And he actually had like an argument. Like, I was saying, like, here's the Canucks Army point of view and here's what Jackson wrote. And in that conversation, he actually had an argument on the other side that made some sense. And I thought, oh, great. I hope he writes this out because this will be great. He'll give his side. They'll give their side and we'll all move on and be happy. And as I was finishing my provies with kind of writing that particular take, like, I hope this is the way it all happens. Then I started getting the text going, you know, the eagle has landed here and there we have poetry.
Well, and I find myself in a very unique position. I'm one of the few that is sort of, you know, trapped in the middle,
right,
a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
I've got ties to Canucks Army. I'm doing a podcast and writing a column here at the province. So I sat back and was a spectator and sort of enjoyed it.
Well, until you were doing the IMAC interview, which...
Right, and Sakaris, I didn't know. We didn't talk about that before. I was surprised a little that Sakaris kind of jumped right in and led him down that path. And
Did you think to jump in there and maybe add a question or something for the... Because I saw you shut down. Did you think, you know what, let's just move on? Was that...
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, yeah. I've enjoyed being a spectator to all of this.
Right.
So I was happy to let Sakaris just kind of, I wanted to see where he was going to take it.
And, right.
I guess I'm a little amused that it all started with, Ian's appearance on the radio and then the basic breakdown on Canucks Army of what he said. Then Ian had his response.
Okay,
we had a line-by-line rebuttal. Like, it's been point, counterpoint, whatever comes after counterpoint, I think is where we are right here in the moment.
And Ian did do that interview and all that, which it all started. And Jackson actually, the Canucks Army could have picked out, it was basically Donnie and Moj's take, actually, to be honest. And that was their take. That hasn't just been their take that day. That's been their take multiple times. And the funny thing is, I've heard like Canucks executives lament the same take. And that's, I wrote that the first day. Like, this is an important issue because the Canucks brass don't get it. They see the fans. They said the same thing. Donnie, Moj, and IMAC all said, like, we don't get these fans. They want to rebuild, but they're all mad. I don't know how these guys know where this big scoreboard is of how Canucks fans are reacting. I don't get how everyone knows how Canucks fans are reacting. I would suggest there's all different types of fans who react all different types of ways. But Jackson, they could have said, this is about Moj or this is about Donnie. I mean, they just happened to choose IMAC, but all of them had the same sense of, which is no one talks about this anymore, which at the foundation of this whole thing is a reasonable discussion about the rebuild, about the direction the Canucks are going in, whether they've always been in that direction or not, and what fans want. There is like a topic for an entire podcast to do at the end of the year just on that topic. But of course, that's all ancient history now.
Well, and I do always, I'm amused by the fan base can't stomach a rebuild. Like, have we canvassed? Like, have we gone door to door in the city? And is it unanimous?
I know.
I didn't have anybody come to my door.
I guess that there was like a clock had been produced in Library Square that you could walk up to and it would be like, Canucks fans, here is their reaction. It would be like, you'd see three sentences of this is how they're feeling at this particular moment. I don't know how people know how attendance looks fine. The team sucks. It's losing. Three out of 4 years, they have played no games of meaning in the last 5 weeks of the season. It's actually shocking to me that the top level is packed every single night and mostly 75-80% of the 100 level in that arena is full. It's filled. The team is so bad, I would expect half of those people to be out of there.
Well, and they caught a huge break with a homestand like this one with Montreal, with Pittsburgh, with the Boston
Bruins.
The opponents
matter. But most of basically, since that Torts year, the empty seats have been about the same.
Yep.
It's not been a wild increase in the numbers of even though the chances of this team being good again are more bleak than they've ever been right now.
And I would suggest to you that, there's never been more traffic on social media.
Oh, yeah.
The podcast didn't exist a year
That's
ago.
Right.
Like, people are still talking about this team as much as ever, if not more, even though they're in the shitter.
Yeah.
And so we'll see, what the fan base thinks
when
they're good. But right now, they're not very good. And we had another example of that. Third period on Monday night against the Boston Bruins was quite something. This team hasn't quit on the coach. We've always applauded the effort. The skill level's not there. They're overmatched most nights. They're in the fight. The goaltending's been pretty good. But they pulled the chute on Monday night in the third period. You ask the coach, and I think this will be one of his quotes of the year. He's had a few, but the fact that he didn't think his group was obsessed with winning. They weren't obsessed with winning much.
That's as close that you'll ever get him to say they gave up. And I thought that third period with the Sedins kind of losing it for the team, was basically a microcosm of how the year has gone. And it's funny, I wrote about this today, that it's funny to hear Willie being pressured into playing the kids when the kids have actually come through for him. Like all, like the big surprises in a positive way this year have been Trampkin, have been Stetcher, like have been the Berchi's reaction to being scratched, has been Horvat's offensive explosion, has been Granlund's 19 goals. The disappointment, what's killed Willie, is his veterans. The Sedins have had their worst year in 13 seasons. The Sedins have let Willie down. Tanev obviously hurt when he was playing. He was not good. He was not up to his regular Tanev standards. Overall, he let Willie down. Brandon Sutter has been scored on a ton this year. I think his goals for percentage is like 38% or something on the season. He hasn't been a defensive shutdown guy. He's got 29 points. He's not going to get 40 this year. He's let Willie down. So it's the vets.
$6 million man.
And of course, that brings us to Louis, who was acquired because this team, and Willie confirmed this again today, believed it would be in the playoff hunt right to the end. There's no other reason you go crazy to this. And it wasn't just Louis. They offered that to Luch too. You don't go crazy looking for a high price free agent goal scorer like that unless you believe, especially for the length of term they were talking about for guys of that age, unless you believe you can be a playoff team, and they absolutely believe that. The low points to me, past two games, the delayed penalty with Spezza, where they just look complete, like they look like little kids out there. 23 passes.
I love the fact you counted.
Actually, Woodley counted for me and gave that to me, so I was like pretty stoked. 23 passes happened before the penalty during the delay part, and then the Marchand fourth goal, the game-winning goal. Again, they look like little kids. Daniel wanted nothing to do with Marchand and Edler. I have no idea. Like, just waited way too long for a guy of that caliber to come at him. You just can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the Boston Bruins, and I know a lot of time has passed since 2011, but it just, it felt like even more of a dagger when it's Marchand that comes to town and runs the show the way he did, and no pushback, none,
why
zero.
Why is it always the Bruins? Like on that road trip, the Horvat, you know, not playing late in the game, you know, that was one, that weekend was the one of the big turning points of the season, and then basically, the Bruins officially put an end to the season. And all kinds of crazy stuff has happened. To, like, I'm watching Jim come out and say, now we're going to play the kids. Well, Jim, how does Willie play the kids if you're not like, in the same story, in IMAX story, says, now we're going to play the kids, but I'm not calling any kids up. So how does Willie play the kids if you aren't calling any kids up? To me, play the kids means Pedan's there, means Subban is on the team, and means Vertanen is called up. If you don't do that, who is left to play? Goldobin is out. God only knows when we'll ever see this guy again. He goes out with dinner with Trampkin. And
right at the height of Trampkin's sickness.
That's right. And Trampkin was out forever. Like, he had the mumps and God knows what else. He, of all the people with the mumps in the history of time, no one has been sidelined as, no hockey player has ever been sidelined as long as Trampkin was. And during the height of all that, he takes Goldobin out. Like, everyone says, oh, the Canucks have such bad luck. Do they? Or do they bring it on themselves? Like, who came up with the idea that Trampkin should be hanging out with Goldobin at the height of his illness? So now Goldobin's out for weeks. I guess it's going to be 2 weeks before we end up seeing him again. Because once if he even joins the team Tuesday, he's going to have to start skating. He probably doesn't play to the end of that road trip. So that's crazy.
He's going to have forgotten what he's learned about the system.
That's right.
He's going to have to be reprogrammed. That could take a few extra days.
So he's not available. Horvat and Berchi are already playing a ton. You can't up them. Like, someone said, oh, this is code for, it's time for Horvat to play. And I go, dude, Horvat's been playing 20 minutes a game for like 3 weeks now. You can't play him anymore. It already looks like he's hitting a wall. Berchi's playing, killing penalties now, and he's playing 20-plus minutes a game. Granlund's with the Sedin's playing a ton. What does playing the kids mean? Does it really... Like, all I could figure out today, I'm looking through the lineup and thinking, like, what does Jim mean by this? And all I could see was, okay, Boucher plays 10-11. Maybe he could play 15. So all of this is about Boucher playing four more minutes, and he... And Jim, by saying it, kind of screws Willie to me. Like, it's kind of like running him over.
More Cramarosa bait. But even, like, you play the kids, and then you bring in Drew Shore, who's not a kid.
Drew Shore was specifically signed and brought in
to replace.
So they didn't have to play the kids. Like, Jim said it. We want him in the lineup so we don't have to call anyone up. And fair enough.
But
Utica's in a playoff race. I can see your point, but don't do that and then say publicly the coach hasn't been suggesting, it's suggestive, that the coach hasn't been doing his job. Now he's going to play the kids. Who?
Well, if we can get to the bottom of how we know what the fan base wants, can we also agree then, this fan base and everybody, can we agree on a definition of the kids?
Oh, right.
Because
I was having this argument today. Does Chaput count? That was one of the
He's
big debates.
He's under 25. I'll give him, I'll include
so
him.
So Chaput counts as the kids.
I'm going with 25 as my cutoff because you and I have established, like, primes of NHL careers have shifted here.
Yeah.
And so, like, Chris Tanev is no longer young by NHL standards. No. He's not. Like, he's not. Drew Shore is 26. Like, right. I'll go with the guys that are, you know, 22, 23. Like, even Berchi's going to be 25 here pretty soon.
Yeah, he barely qualifies. Like, he's, you know, I look at Berchi and I think veteran now. Like, I don't look at Berchi and think that's a kid.
Right, I'm with you. But sort of all these guys that haven't been part of the organization very long, because they're new to the organization, sort of get lumped into that kid.
Right.
But they're not. They're not kids at all. And, like, Eric and Branson is under 25, so I guess by my definition...
No, I think he's 25.
Is he 25 now?
Yeah.
Okay, then he's not a kid.
Right, he's out.
But, again, because he was, you know, first-year guy here, we haven't seen him, but they lump him in as part of the kid group. Like, we need, like, a definition for kids in the Canuck organization.
I think under 25 and not turning 25 in that calendar year. So if Chaput is 24 now and turning 25 this year, I really can't count him as a kid. Not a kid, a young player. I don't count him as a kid.
Right, but we get caught up on that word, and it's just kind of foolish, but...
It has a lot of meaning here.
But there is a distinction to be made. Chris Tanev, not a kid.
Definitely not. No.
Jason Megna is not a kid. Nobody's clamoring to see him included in that group.
Right.
In fact, they want to see the kids in place of a guy like Jason Megna.
Another guy who let Willie down dramatically this year.
Did he? Well,
yes. Okay. Yes. He is their worst possession player on the team by every metric I looked at. He's got 4 goals and he's been given every kind of opportunity, J-Pat. How can you question me on this? One of the big letdowns of the year was Willie rolling out Megna in all these roles and Megna doing nothing with all these chances and all that speed and all that supposed great defensive tenacity.
Right, but isn't a lot of that on Willie DeJardin? Like, after 10 games, I think it was clear to all of us that this guy he was signed to be a fringe guy.
Right.
He got called up, he got hurt, and then other guys got hurt, and when he came back, he's at a spot, he's had the gold card, you know, the organization, carte blanche. I was looking at it today, if he doesn't score tomorrow against Dallas, he'll have 1 goal in 40 games.
Wow. Oh my God.
And that's not fourth line minutes. That's above the fourth line with power play time.
That's crazy.
And I you may have seen the tweet earlier today. I honestly woke up. I swear to God, this is a true story. This is how my brain works. Watch, I woke up at like 2 a.m. and I asked myself, who's in the top 10 goal scoring on the Vancouver Canucks? I couldn't bring myself to get out of bed and look it up at 2 a.m.
Right.
But I swear. Where to God, this happened last night. And I'm saying, like, I lose sleep over the Vancouver Canucks. That's what it's come to. Who's in the top 10? So I got up this morning.
Oh, man.
And I knew what the... I didn't know the full order. I couldn't recite it off the top of my head. But I knew where this was going. Jason Megna and Jack Skilly with 4 goals apiece. are tied for 10th on the Vancouver Canucks this year. 70 games into the season, those guys are top 10 goal scorers on the Vancouver Canucks.
What's crazy is Boucher is right behind them. He's only played like 15, 16 games. He's got 2 goals. He's right behind them.
Goldie's not that far behind.
Goldie can catch him. Goldie can catch him. If Goldie plays the rest of the season, he'll catch him.
I had somebody suggest if they sign Besser and get him in here, he could very well
pass
those guys. I think his season, college season, will extend too far that he won't have the opportunity.
I don't think that they're making the Frozen Four. I think that
I just mean even he'll only get here with 8 games to go or something. And I don't know if he can.
Oh yeah, 4 goals in 8 games is a lot. So, but he's got a shot. Because I one of the reasons that he wants in, like he wants to play NHL games, because the plan right now is for him to start next. Everyone thinks they want him to start with Vancouver. They don't, and it's going to be a real test for them because there's going to be all kinds of fan pressure and pressure from ownership probably for Besser to be in the lineup to start next year. But right now the plan is for him to start next season in Utica. You know, we've quote unquote learned our lesson from Virtanen and McCann. Besser thinks if he can get here now, get games in now, it'll be and do well, it'll be much more difficult for them to make that move in the fall.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, again, I saw the highlight of him, and it was just a YouTube clip. But the power play goal that he scored last week, the right-handed shot in the left circle, the one-timer, like nobody
like
in this organization, or at least nobody at the big league level. Jordan Subban scored a few goals like that down in Utica. Again, call him up. He's a kid. Give him a shot. But nobody on this roster right now, the big league roster, is scoring that goal. Like that's a goal that we have not seen. You got to go back a ways. Sammy Salo, the odd Kessler goal, I guess, the right-handed shot in that left circle. But that was a goal that it's getting scored around the NHL, but not by members of the Vancouver Canucks. The podcast, of course, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express, your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out. They're open weekdays and weekends in Coquitlam, 2 blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway. Visit them online, eagleridgegm.com. We've kind of had some fun with the word luxury that's been used to describe the Vancouver Canucks defense at times this season.
No, I think that there's been a real awakening. For a long period of time, I felt like there was only a few of us out there saying, like, look, guys, this defense is not as good as being portrayed by the team, and it needs a lot of work, and there's no way that they should be peeling off talented players off this defense to try to get scoring up front because it's not good enough, it's not deep enough, it's not offensive enough. I think that there's been a realization from people here of late that, yeah, they don't shoot, they don't get pucks on net. I'd be surprised to see where if they were in the top half of the league in shots on net for a defense, I'd be surprised. I know that I was just looking at Troy Stetcher. In the first 20 games he played of the season, he had 60 shots on net. In the last 20, it's been like 20.
Yeah.
So there's been a major drop off there. We both know that they don't score, and they have a very difficult time transitioning the puck out of their own end up the ice, which is something that Henrik picked out specifically on after Saturday's loss to the Bruins. And he said, this right here, breakout passes and the defense carrying the puck up the ice, trying to deke out people, are the two of the biggest issues on this team right now.
And for the longest while, people were like, this Lucas Pisa, you know, where's this Lucas Pisa? This Lucas Pisa has completely...
You're among them.
At one point this season, I was buying in a little bit. He's just fallen off the map now. And I know I wrote about him on the weekend. I was surprised to hear him admit that Vegas is on his mind. I don't see Las Vegas taking him in the expansion draft. I don't. I think
you do know that there's a theory out there that Spezza does not want to go to Vegas and is playing or embracing the tank.
He's the tank commander right now?
Just so he doesn't have to go to Vegas.
Well, based on what I see, I can almost buy some of that. Like, it really, for a while there, and maybe it's just that, you know, he's played higher in the lineup than he should have with the injuries.
Too much.
But it's not been pleasant to watch.
I was pointing out for a while that, like, from November on, he had played the second most minutes of any defenseman on the team, and it's too much. He's another guy another veteran that's let Willie down, that was played too much. Him, Megna, Twins, I mean, the list goes on. It was the veterans that crushed this team.
And Botch, I mean, here they are in a stretch of the schedule now where the bottom's falling out. They've got 2 wins in their last 10. They're just so permissive. I mean, 40-plus shots to the point where Willie said the goal now.
I couldn't believe that.
And I think this was after the Pittsburgh game on Saturday where they gave up 48 shots. And he said the goal now is to keep opponents under 40. And then the Bruins come in Tuesday and they get 43. So, you know, it wasn't mission accomplished there.
Yes, it was, because the Bruins shot a lot.
They had 17 early.
And it was only because they gave up 17 early.
Right.
The other two periods were around 12. If they average, their goal is to average 12 shots against.
You don't get
per period. I don't think in the history of the NHL any coach has ever said, we're good if we keep the shots under 40. I can't imagine those words have ever been uttered by another head coach in the league.
But how does that work? Like, you don't get to choose one period and just throw it on the discard pile and average out the other two. Like, the first period happened. I was there. Yeah. I watched it as yeah. you and again, that the 6-on-5 delayed penalty against Pittsburgh really, I mean, that we've seen the Twins do that to some other teams, but it's been a while since we've seen a team come into Vancouver and do that to the Vancouver Canucks. That was something.
The Penguins had the puck in the offensive zone for a minute 30. A minute 30, 90 seconds, before that power play started. Before the power play started. It was like Miller was talking about how much his legs burned during that. Like, he was done. He didn't practice again today. He was off again today. Again, played way too much, which I don't understand. Like, Backman is the guy that's actually signed for next season, the guy that the coach wouldn't trust at the beginning of last season. Backman is the guy who made 43 saves against the Ducks. Why is he not getting games here? I understand Markstrom can't play. He's hurt. But that doesn't mean Ryan Miller should be playing every single game.
And that was another stunning development today. And you were at the rink. I wasn't. But to hear the coach say that now there's some question about whether Markstrom's going to travel on this trip right. next week. Like, we're coming up on a month now from that skills competition.
But I think we guessed at the time it was an MCL sprain, and it seems that's the case. We knew it was the knee. 3 to 4 weeks recovery from an MCL sprain. So, chariot race. I don't think it's going to be part of the skills competition next time.
No, but it's just going to be, I mean, when we write the book on this season, it's going to be mumps. It's going to be chariot race.
Right.
It's going to be food poisoning.
Yeah, all the guys hanging out at Spies in California.
Like, it's just so many.
Goldobin going out for dinner with Trampkin. A chariot race.
And Tanev, too. Like, you know, last minute food poisoning. And again, we haven't seen him since. I'm thinking that it's probably...
But we don't believe that,
no,
do we?
No, we don't. I mean, right. Granlin comes back from his food poisoning, scores twice in the first period.
Right.
Never been better coming off food poisoning. Tanev is locked up in a room somewhere. And again, I'm now of the feeling that we may not see him. I know Willie said maybe on the weekend in Edmonton. I guess I'm at a point where I'll be surprised if we see him again this season. Like, I do believe that they're that close to shutting a few guys down here.
Yeah, they should shut Tanev down. And they should shut Brandon Sutter down and let him go. Like, he's just fallen off. He can't find Brandon. He can't shoot. His wrist, like, it's unfortunate for him. Like, he was having an okay year. Wasn't having a great year. But he's disappeared since the wrist injury.
And, again, I don't expect it to change. I know he had a second assist on the Edler goal the other night. But it's been reinforced this year. Like, he's been relatively healthy. He's played almost every game. I know the last...
Who?
Sutter, the last month or so he's been banged up. But
when the season ends and he's got like 32 points.
But the thing that really jumps out at me is, and I've tracked this now, he has one primary assist in his last 35 games.
Wow.
And it came against Colorado, the worst team in the NHL. His only primary, this is a guy that has played second line minutes for much of the season as a center. Maybe Horvat's moving past him now, sort of the way it should be. But Brandon Sutter, just it's so clear, and lots has been made and written. Canucks Army has done extensive work on this subject about, is he a legitimate even third-line center in the National Hockey League? He sure as hell isn't any kind of playmaking center.
No, he does not.
So I start to wonder, like, he can shoot the puck. That's one thing. He can kill penalties, and he can shoot the puck. Like, should they be looking at him as a winger? Not with the Twins, but
right. Well, maybe he does well winning face-offs. Supposedly,
you can still take face-offs.
Yeah. supposedly he doesn't hit anyone. Is he really going to be good along the boards?
I don't know.
Forechecking. I think he kind of plays like a center. He thinks like a center, although you're right. He can't. He needs a playmaking winger probably to play with. If his name was not Sutter, I don't believe anyone would have thought him ever as a second line center. I think the only reason is the name that people have kind of, and coaches and the NHL fraternity and all of these guys think that he can be a second line center in the NHL. He can't. And I think that that's over with. Like, it's pretty clear that heading into next year, Horvat's going to be the clear cut number one. I think it's got to happen. I asked Willie about this today and he said, he kind of conceded that the transition should start taking place. Like, I waited. I was doing a thing on Henrik. I just wanted to ask him one question. I waited till the kind of scrum dissipated. And I could get him over to the side. I had a really good question about him, but how much responsibility he thinks he should take for the way that the season has gone. And
who poached it?
And so, well, like, I love Abs, and I honestly think John Abbott is a star and is going to be a star. And he's one of the guys that freaking, like, you look at the, like, there's fans and then you can tell, okay, this fan gets it. This fan has no clue. There's certain guys in the media that I can look at and say, this media, that guy gets it. This guy does not. Abs is for sure one of the guys that absolutely 100% gets it. But as I was asking Henrik that question, and I got a really good answer, him saying, like, for the first time ever, I feel like we've cost the team games. I'm like, freaking great, man. That's awesome. That's all I need, Hank. That quote will make my whole story. I took it back to Willie, asked him about it. Great. I'm writing my story. I'm just about finished. And then, bing, I see Abs has tweeted out that quote from Henrik.
Oh, no.
I was like, damn you, Abs.
Why were you looking at me when you were talking about some guys in the media that don't get it?
I was, you know how I feel about you.
Question for me, I guess, now, and it's amazing it took this long, but again,
I wouldn't be doing a podcast.
It tells you the kind of week that was. Like, you talk about John Abbott being a star, and I agree. It's a question of where is he going to be a star?
Right.
We got half an hour into this thing. Like,
no radio rights talk.
Yeah. And you and I were Jonathan McDonald's little going away shindig here downtown when the news broke. Last Thursday.
Right. And there's all kinds of, like, stories about how this all unfolded. And for sure, there were points where 1040 thought that they were getting the deal. They had a 3-year offer. I was talking to someone yesterday who believes that 1040 ended up pulling their 3-year deal off the table. So that's one of the big rumors out there, that they made a decision that they were going to get out of the play-by-play stuff. And I think everyone agrees that they were losing money, and they're paying well over $3 million a year for the Canucks play-by-play rights, and the interest just isn't there for people. Like, everyone gets Canucks games, and now with all the on-the-go apps that you have with Talis or Shaw, even if you're not home, you can actually watch the game. Yep. On your phone or your tablet or whatever. So you're almost cornered into the car market, people driving in cars, and there's just not a huge percentage of people still on the road at 7 o'clock at night.
No, but those people that are in cars, if they need a new one, they should swing by Eagle Ridge GM. March is truck month at Eagle Ridge GM. Get up to $10,000 total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for full details. And it's true. Look, I mean, I've been on the broadcast for a while now. Disappointed, certainly. And we'll see how, everything shakes down here and what the future holds. And I suppose for this industry that has seen so many cutbacks with all the rumors and talk of another sports station, it may turn into some opportunities for some.
But you know that the two sports stations can't work long term in the city. Like, it just, the share isn't big enough.
Right? And I've lived through that already. Yeah. But I do hope that John Abbott and Dave Tomlinson, for them, and the Canucks will have some say in who's calling their games. So I hope that those guys continue on. I know that that's obviously what they want to do, and the rest of us, we'll see how the cards.
I would think that's the way it's going to go, because I'm definitely not alone in thinking that Abs is a rising star, and I think that they'll see it that way too, and I do think that they'll take those guys.
We saw it with Mike Gillis at the end for him. Was relieved of his duties in season. there was sort of fan backlash and a, you know, a bit of a revolt. Remember the protests outside the rink? I remember the guy on the scooter that was driving around.
What a time.
But, you know, ownership certainly, you know, I think they don't want to feel fan backlash, and they fear that we talk about ticket renewals and all those types of things. There's 13 games to go here.
Right.
If this thing continues to slide, like, does the coach survive to the end of this year?
To the end of this year. I think so. I don't see an easy out, an easy alternative.
If he goes against the GM, though, and doesn't play the kids?
Right. But... if there were kids here and he wasn't playing them, I would agree. And if Goldobin is down to 6 minutes a game, possibly that there could be some conflict. But I think that the Canucks make a lot of decisions based on not wanting bad publicity. I think it would look bad with like a few games left if they let Willie go. I think for the most part, he's right. I mean, they were competitive for most of the season. It's off the rails right now. I don't think anyone in his position is going to be able to right the rails. I think that he's done, as you know, I argued earlier, the veterans are the ones who let him down. And you could also make another argument that those are the people he has the least influence over. Like, he's not going to make or break the Sedins. You know, we can talk about the power play and other deployments he could have made and decisions he could have made. But ultimately, the failure of the power play is on the Twins. They are the $7 million guys. They have to make that power play work. And I'm right with everyone else questioning a ton of deployment decisions that Willie has made. And I wrote about him continuing to have Bo Horvat on the PK as another problem. The kind of how he just let the power play stagnate for the second year in a row when just no creativity was shown. But ultimately, the failure there is on the Twins. I really don't think that it can help the organization by making a move on Willie before the end of the year. That said, I also, like Ebner said to me the other day, it just feels like Willie has run its course. And I feel like we've come to an end here. I feel like, you know, he's had his opportunity, he's had his run, and just his thing with the Canucks, it's just over. It just feels over to me.
And no, I'm with you there. And we're around this team enough to pick up on those sort of vibes and those signals. And look, in his 3 years here, Willie DeJardin, post-game, post-practice, has said next to nothing, right? Like, really has given us very few gold clips. And in the last couple of games, we're starting to get some honesty, some real truth. Yeah. Not that he wasn't telling the truth before, but this is a guy that seems to have, you know, taken the shield down a little bit and isn't worried.
Right.
Like, what are they going to do? Fire me?
Yeah.
And again, it's just sort of connecting some dots here that make me feel that, you know, he can see where this thing's going. It's just a question of, does it happen in the summer, or, you know, does he get to the summer?
Right. Yeah. And I think that if you were a coach and you were going through this and you knew you were coming back, you'd be furious. I would be enraged at this team. 40 freaking shots every night. Are you freaking kidding me? And he's just as calm and as cool and as eloquent and as verbose as I've ever seen him. Like, you could not, he was like Willie Mitchell up there today. You ask him a question and his answer, I'm timing it in minutes. Is this,
you had the stopwatch out again?
This is still going? Really?
I like that.
So.
New nickname. Willie Mitchell.
Man.
Because Willie Mitchell, you're right. You could just like ask the question, set your recorder down, lunch, come back, and he'd still be going with that same answer.
Yeah, he's like, we used to have a pretty good relationship because he loves fishing. My brother owns like a bunch of fishing lodges in BC. And I went to, he was one of those preseason skates that they have, like a get together of like local hockey, you know, veteran NHL players. And I was doing a story. I can't remember who I was doing it on. But I made a joke in there that, like, you know, everyone's loose. No one's really trying. It's like even Willie Mitchell was deking guys and like created a breakaway. And he DM'd me and he said, what the hell is this? He was so mad. And I'm like, I was just trying to make a joke. Well, you shouldn't make a joke at my expense. And then he stopped following me.
No.
And yeah. So.
Oh, there's fallout here.
Yeah, there was a fallout.
Well, maybe Drancer with the Florida. The Florida connection. Convene a peace summit here.
Man, the magic. Like, I can't believe Florida. Like, there should have been a bidding war. NHL teams, If you consider the job that Drancer did keeping the mainstream media and the blogosphere in harmony for that many years, for 5 years, 6 years, there should have been a bidding war for his skills.
Well, let's just bring it full circle as we wrap up here. And that is sort of this notion that still exists, the us against them. And, you know, you're kind of in the middle because you certainly have embraced the Army and the blog and have been a champion of Canucks Army. I think their Twitter profile, in fact, mentions your name.
Yeah, so, but I have had like lots of like there's been a ton of art like Drance and I argued a lot, and he took like Tony's one of my best friends in the business. He took Tony down a ton. Like I went back and I looked at some of like, you know, Drance's diatribes about, you know, something Tony said about Yannick Hansen and all different well, stuff. Like,
of course, if he went after Hansen,
like, yeah. And Tony would ignore it, and he was fine with it. And I would go back and forth with them, and you know, online and stuff, we would argue. I don't think that there's anything – like, I encourage that. I want – the more people that are writing about the Canucks, talking about the Canucks, debating the Canucks, arguing about the Canucks is better for everyone. I think it helps increase interest. It helps increase discourse. It helps people, you know, oh, he was right. There's nothing wrong with being wrong. Like, there's been lots of times where I said, yeah, you know what? I was wrong. I was wrong about Yannick Hansen. You got me. Guess what? I flipped, and all of a sudden, I became a huge champion of Yannick Hansen playing on the power play, which was one of the ones I found from Drance. He was, like, just hammering Tony, and Tony was complaining that said AVs keeps playing Hansen on the power play, and it's AVs pathology that keeps doing it. And Drance took him to task. And I ended up flipping on that. And I think it ended up, Tony ended up saying, yeah, you know what? I was wrong on that. There's nothing wrong with being wrong. And there's nothing wrong with debate. And as many of those guys that are out there writing about the team, trying to make it in the business, whether it's, you know, working for an NHL team or writing about the team, more power to you, man. Fucking grind it out. Write as much as you can. Work as hard as you can. Because if I was their age, in their shoes, I would be doing the exact same thing.
And that's,
and so would I, Mac.
You're right, and so would I. And that's, it just didn't exist. Like, you know, we're dinosaurs in that regard, that we started in this business before these opportunities existed. But you're right. Like, if we both had the passion that we do for this game and this team, you're damn right. We'd both have been, in, you know, a 20-year-old pounding away and right. writing and doing a, probably doing a podcast.
We would be.
Before we even knew each other, it would have brought us together, Botch. I will say this, and look, I contribute not an awful lot. It's been scaled back since I started there, but I'm still a contributor at Canucks Army. But if people aren't checking out Canucks Army, like, they're doing it wrong here. Like, as far as being Canuck fans, I'm with you. Like, I do this for a living, but I'm a consumer too. Like, if there's something out there that somebody's written with a good right. take, like, I want to read it. And there are guys at Canucks Army doing stuff that nobody else in town here is doing. And these guys are so, and I say guys, there's some females to contribute too. You know, the passion for the game and for the Canucks, it gets so evident. What I will say, and I've told some of these guys too, the one thing I wish they'd stop the back padding a little bit because they've arrived on the scene. Like yeah. they are part of the circle now.
Yeah.
And let the work speak for itself. I think it does most of the time. So I would just, and I've given that advice to them directly, but I would also just say, like, let your work stand on it so you don't constantly need to be pointing out, you know, the good work that's being done. I right. think that people realize that, you know, Canucks Army has been used as a springboard by a number of people
yeah.
to NHL jobs, to, you know, jobs in the hockey writing business. So keep up the good work. I mean, I'm constantly amazed at the amount of work that goes into a website. For a lot of these
Incredible.
Guys, it's a hobby
it's a
still.
Of work.
Like, it's crazy in some ways, but
yeah.
more power
and
to them.
Super smart. Like, this yeah. idea that they're not smart or they're like the... Like,
oh, watch, I sat at the back of the Van Hack the
other
day.
Some of them had amazing, like, way better jobs than I have or anyone that works at, like, you know, really smart other jobs. Like, people don't have a clue, I guess, outside, if you don't take the time to get to know them, who these people are. But they're super smart. They know all, like, all kinds of, and they have kind of changed and been at the forefront of evolving how all of us, fans, media, everyone views the game analyzes the game. They've brought a lot of things to the forefront of our attention. That's why I thought in Vancouver we're kind of past, you know, because we've had the Canucks Army, because it's been so good, because so many of them have gone on to work in actual NHL, like crazy. Like there should be a movie made about this. Like guys are in like scouting departments and executives. At the Bruins game, Kyle Dubas was there scouting for the Leafs with Cam Charon, right from Canucks Army. The two of them side by side. Like that blows my mind. There should be a movie one day. I made the point in the Provies the other night. I live in a town with Canucks Army. I do like their smarmy. Like they are smarmy. And I do like it a bit. I do like Botch how full of themselves they are. Like that's like I learned, like I've spent a lot of time going back and forth with Drance, spent a lot of time kind of hanging out with him. I've learned to appreciate that part of him and that part of Canucks Army. And I love it even more when they are actually wrong. It's like such a wonderful, great day when that happens. It's amazing. Like when Drance loses a bet about David Booth, it escalates in its value because he always thinks he's right. So I like deep down, I think that they're a lot more, if you get to know the guys, they're a lot more humble than they let on. But that veneer of like, we're never wrong. It has some appeal to me. I don't know why. I'm attracted to that.
And look, it's not going to be for everybody. But again, I'm so glad that there's a place at the table for the work that they're doing. I do hope that there will always be room for, you know, the good story from the game itself. That, you know, coverage seems to be shifting towards the numbers. And we live in a world that's all about bite size, you know, everything and attention spans. Right. I do hope, though, like there are some great stories in and around the game of hockey that, you know, you've told over the years, and IMAX told over the years, and I'd like to think I've told the occasional one too. I hope that, again, like if it's a big buffet, you pick and choose ultimately what you want, but the very fact that everything is there and available to the consumer, I just think is good for the game, and it's good for the Vancouver Canucks, even where the Canucks are in their cycle.
Right.
Again, the amount, there's a huge passion. Like, it's so clear that there's a passion. Like, you and I are coming up on an hour talking about the Vancouver Canucks, who are in the absolute crapper in terms of a season that's off the rails, 13 games to go, but there's still this massive appetite for anything to do, even with a bad hockey team.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned this like before on the show, but like to me, the golden goose immediate is that people should be chasing is to be able to tell a great story with complex numbers in it, with revelations from players and their ideas and their thoughts. And I think that if someone out there, and I haven't seen the person who's capable of doing it, but that is the person who I think could be a star in the business, someone that's able to meld all three of them and do it regularly.
You on the upcoming trip? You heading back out of the road?
I am missing
Edmonton, though. Going back for like the 10th time.
I was reading this week.
Yes.
One of the headlines that came across, like, Bettman says that the Rogers place is the crown jewel of the, like, they're still, it's March, and they're still talking about how amazing their arena is. Like, I cannot believe that this is still a topic that you just get super excited, that you write a whole, like, Bettman pays you a compliment, and then all these stories. Bettman loves the arena. It's the best in the NHL. He's blown away. He says there should be all-star games here and drafts and everything. But then I look. I am scheduled. This is so appropriate. Last game of the season is in Edmonton, and guess who's going to be there? That'll be me.
And they'll be ramping up for the first ever playoff game Rogers Place. So probably a ceremony for that. They'll be shutting it the end of the first regular season in the new building. They'll bring all the alumni back and they'll do it all again. But you get Chicago and St. Louis then and some of the...
Yeah, but it feels like I was in the locker room today and like it just feels like I've done every... to me, it feels like the season should be over on Friday or Saturday. And then I look and there's still like 3 or 4 weeks left of season. Like I'm already feeling like next week's road trip is going to be like a death march. It's just going to be gloom and doom every day in that locker room. It's going to be really tough to win games. They got Chicago. They got St. Louis. I don't know, man.
Back ends with Minnesota, Winnipeg back to back.
Yeah, I am not actually, like, I think this is the road trip to miss, actually. sucks that I'm on it.
Now you're begging to go to Edmonton for the first, the front end of it.
Yeah, let me drop it after Edmonton.
All right, we'll reconvene. We'll do this again, catch up with you from the road. Podcast, as always, presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. Great people. We had some fun out there when we did the live on location a few weeks back. People here in the building still buzzing about it. Apparently, they were happy with it, so glad to hear that. Eagle Ridge GM in Coquitlam, your one-stop car and truck center where everybody's part of the Rocky family. Check them out online, and I say this every time. If you're in the market for a vehicle, hey, they support us. Please support them. Check them out. Start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. Botch has the suitcases packed. Not before the Dallas Stars come to town. The commissioner in town, too, so maybe he'll give us some stuff, some material for next week's podcast. Lots of ground to cover. What a busy weekend.
Ask about Rogers playing tomorrow.
Well, somebody might.
I hope.
But it's been a crazy busy week for the Vancouver Canucks. We hope we wrapped it up for you here. The podcast on Province Radio.